Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Fight for Trump! Fight for Trump! Fight for Trump!
38 days after the violent and deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol in support of then-President Donald Trump, the Senate acquitted him of one count of inciting the riot. While seven Republicans voted with Democrats for conviction, most GOP senators sided with Trump, an indication that even out of office, defeated at the polls and twice impeached, Trump remains a dominant presence within the Republican Party. Here's Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday on Fox News saying that Donald Trump is the key to future Republican victories.
We need to unite the party. Trump plus is the way back in 2022.
But a very different view from Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, even though he voted to acquit. Buying the argument that a former president cannot be impeached, McConnell says Trump incited, supported, and failed to stop the violent attack of January 6th.
President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day.
I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. This hour, we're talking about what Trump's acquittal by the Senate means for the future of the Republican Party and for American democracy. And to help us do that, to guide us through this hour, we're joined by Norman Ornstein. He's emeritus scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, contributing editor at The Atlantic, and he joins us from Washington. Norm Ornstein, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Anthony. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, it's really good to have you. And this is an important discussion. I've been looking forward to having it with you. So I want to start this way. President Trump is unpopular with most Americans, has been for most of his political career. He never cracked 50% approval rating. During his term in office, he was twice impeached, lost the House, the Senate, the White House. According to polls, most Americans believe he did incite the violence on January 6th. So why did a majority of Republicans vote to acquit him?
You know, we see it with the Republican Party that while a majority of Americans were very unhappy with his conduct leading up to the insurgency and the insurrection on January 6th, a majority of Republicans felt differently. And the most active activist Republicans in particular. And I'm not just talking about the rank and file. What we're seeing now is state parties condemning in Louisiana, unanimously condemning Senator Bill Cassidy for voting to convict Trump. This is a Republican Party that some years ago refused to do the same thing for David Duke. So it's a very different Republican Party now. And I think we have different groups of Republicans in the Senate with different motives. There are some who are true believers, a few at least, and I think Rand Paul may be among them, who really do believe that the election was stolen still, despite the overwhelming evidence to the contrary, and who are with Trump or all in. There are some who are just scared to death of being shunned and excommunicated and maybe even threatened physically and otherwise if they take on Trump. And remember, they're all very much aware of what happened to Brad Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State, who had death threats against himself and his family, large numbers of them. There's a fear factor here that's pretty considerable, and it's led to a significant amount of cowardice. And then there are those who I think are just more specifically calculating, looking to 2024 and looking for the best way to gain traction to maybe run as a smarter, younger version of Trump.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you about that. But first, let me come back to this idea that you put on the table, this fear factor. And it seems like that fear factor has had so much to do, I mean, at one point anyway, with the fact that President Trump was in the White House, that Donald Trump was in the White House as president. So I'm curious to know what your view about where he goes as a political force in the Republican Party. I mean, clearly for the moment, it's his party, But in the months ahead, as he dwells in exile in Mar-a-Lago, a disgrace, twice impeached, former president, does that influence fade, do you think? That power to intimidate members of his own party?
Well, one thing we know about his power is that deplatforming him from some of the major social media outlets, and particularly Twitter, where his messages resonated so enormously, and they were picked up on by mainstream media as they were by right-wing media, and amplified in many different ways, that resulted in an immediate reaction out there. That taking that away has been somewhat damaging for him. Now, he's going to find other platforms, and he has plenty of allies on some of those platforms, including, of course, on cable television with not just Fox loyal soldiers like Sean Hannity, but talk radio with Laura Ingraham on ON network, on Newsmax, which has picked up a lot of support. He'll find some social media outlets, Parler may be one of them, but it's tougher for him. At the same time, we have to keep in mind that Trump faces enormous challenges now out of office, legal challenges. He's being investigated for criminal conduct in Georgia by the Fulton County prosecutors. As I might note, is Lindsey Graham, perhaps his strongest cheerleader in the Senate, as you kind of pointed out at the beginning of the show, when as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Graham called and tried to influence the vote count in Georgia. But for Trump, he also has major legal challenges in New York, from the New York Attorney General, from the New York City District Attorney, over his financial dealings before he became president. And we may well see the Southern District of New York, the Justice Department, follow up on what Mitch McConnell, the Senate Republican leader, said as he condemned Trump after voting to acquit him, but said there are criminal charges that could be brought to a former president. We know he has financial challenges as well, but I think we can make no mistake about it. The fact that the vast majority of Republican senators, after all of this, voted to acquit. That after what we learned, you know, one of the most striking things about this, Anthony, look at the House of Representatives, where we saw this last minute twist in the trial as we got the public expression of the several members of the House about the phone call that Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader, had in the middle of the siege while he saw his members threatened and potentially being killed, calling the president and begging for help. And having the president say first that it was Antifa, and when McCarthy said, no, it's your supporters, he said, well, maybe they care more about the election than you do, Kevin, which got an expletive in response. But after that, McCarthy and all but 10 of those House Republicans, 200 of them, still voted against the impeachment. So that tells you that even out of office now, Trump has a lot of sway over Republicans. And while we see a couple of polls since the acquittal in the Senate that show support from Republicans has dropped some, a majority still strongly support Trump and believe that the election was rigged. So he's still got power here, and how long that lasts and what happens as it confronts his legal challenges is one of the big unknowns.
Yeah, big unknown and the big question that we're going to be following. I want to play a little tape just from this past week. Here's Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. He signaled before Saturday's vote to acquit that he would support that vote to acquit. But afterward, he justified the vote by saying that he didn't believe the Senate had the jurisdiction to bar the former president from running for office again. But he also added this.
There's no question. None. That President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president.
And here's Senator Lindsey Graham responding to Mitch McConnell's post-acquittal speech on Fox News yesterday, saying that it will put a, quote, load on the back of Republicans. Here's Graham.
That speech you will see in 2022 campaigns. I would imagine if you're a Republican running in Arizona or Georgia or New Hampshire, where we have a chance to take back the Senate, they may be playing Senator McConnell's speech and asking you about it as a candidate.
So, Norm Ornstein, an example there of part of the split within the Republican Party. Let me ask you first about the calculation of Mitch McConnell. Is it as transparent as it might appear to many that he's sort of, you know, voted for acquittal but then condemned Trump? He's trying to have it both ways there.
And, you know, there's an irony here. We've talked a lot about whether the election vote was rigged. This was in some ways rigging the impeachment conviction vote, because what McConnell did when the House impeached Trump while he was still in office and the articles were going to the Senate, McConnell, who was still majority leader at the time, said, we're not going to convene until January 19th, the day before the inaugural, the day before Trump was going to leave office. And now is saying, well, he was guilty of all these things, but we couldn't do it because he's no longer in office. So he made sure there wouldn't be a trial and potential conviction while Trump was still in office. I do think, having known Mitch McConnell for many, many years, every action that he takes is conditioned by what he sees as his own self-interest. And right now, his interest is in trying to protect his members, the 17 running for re-election in 2022, the 20 seats that they have that are up. And while Lindsey Graham's position is that this is going to be difficult for those Republicans, I think McConnell's calculation is based on pretty much what happened in 2018, which is there was an enormous backlash against Republicans from a good portion of their base. The more educated suburban voters, they came back to the Republican Party in 2022, although they voted in many cases for Joe Biden. They did not vote for Democratic candidates for the Senate or House, which is why the Senate ended up with a 50-50 tie instead of a significant Democratic edge, and the House Democrats lost seats.
Norm Ornstein, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because we're coming up on a break, but I'm sorry to jump in here, but we're going to pick up right after this break with Norm Ornstein. We're talking about the second impeachment trial and the second acquittal of former President Trump and what it means for the Republican Party going forward. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about the acquittal of Donald Trump, what it means for the future of the Republican Party. I'm here with Norm Ornstein, emeritus scholar at the American Enterprise Institute and contributing editor at The Atlantic. And I want to play a little tape from this week. This is Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Republican. After Bill Cassidy voted to convict President Trump, the chair of the state legislature's Republican caucus tweeted that the senator was part of the problem in D.C., and should not expect a warm welcome home. The senator responded to that yesterday on ABC's This Week.
I was elected to uphold an oath to support and defend the Constitution. The majority of the people in Louisiana want that to be the case. And I have respected that trust. I have voted to support and defend the Constitution.
And here's another perspective from Senator Cornyn of Texas, John Cornyn of Texas, Republican of Texas. He voted to acquit, suggested that Trump might have been complicit in the attack on the Capitol, but that doesn't mean the Senate had the right to find him guilty in an impeachment trial. Here he is.
President Trump's words and actions leading up to the attack were reckless and wrong. But as we all know, the constitutional standard for impeachment isn't recklessness.
Norm Ornstein, before the break, you were talking about how Trump's influence and power sort of might evolve in the months ahead based on what we've seen in the past.
Yeah. And, you know, we have the parties have their challenges, always do. But the Republican Party challenge is a bigger one right now. A part of it is what I guess you could call an ideological, theological dispute. It really is over how radical your policies are going to be and how radical your approach is going to be to simply the institutions, how much you will respect the fundamental institutions. But some of it is over support for Trump or opposition to Trump, support for conspiracy theories or not. And where the Republican challenge is in elections is with the college-educated suburban voters who have been a core part of their base and who, it's important to remember, turn out in larger numbers in off-year elections and midterm elections than do the working-class white members of their base who are now the single largest part of it. Lose those suburban voters, and in 2022, the Republican hopes of recapturing the Senate disappear, and Democrats will do much better. The same is true in the House. And I do think, going back to Mitch McConnell, that McConnell was trying to thread a needle here. He wasn't going to let Joe Biden's victory, which he took several weeks to acknowledge, get in the way of having Donald Trump leave in disgrace and further dividing his party. But he wanted to send a signal to suburban voters who were appalled by a lot of what went on with Trump and who I think probably paid more attention to the House manager's quite compelling videos. He wasn't going to let them basically leave. So he wanted to say, look, we understand how horrible it was what Trump did, but this is not the time and place to deal with it.
Right. I'm really struck by the differing approaches from by Mitch McConnell, minority leader in the Senate, and Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House. I mean, these are two party leaders who are hoping to regain power in 2022. McConnell seems, as you suggest, to believe that tying himself to Trump is not a winning formula. McCarthy has made a different calculation about the best route for the Republicans to take the House. Are they both right? In other words, are the dynamics different in the House races versus the Senate races?
Yeah, I think they're very much different because where Republicans are in the House right now, coming pretty close to having a majority. But what they're looking at is still recapturing some of those seats that Democrats managed to hold on to that tend to be more red, and they're still playing to the base. And, you know, what's striking about Kevin McCarthy, there are two areas worth just exploring for a minute, Anthony. One is after he called Donald Trump, huddled on the House floor in a panic over what was happening, begged for help and got spurned. He went down just a 2.5 weeks later to Mar-a-Lago to make amends with the president and, among other things, ask him for his donor list. So, you know, he showed kind of what he was out for. Trump, by the way, didn't give him the donor list, which is itself interesting. But the second part of this is remember that Kevin McCarthy was juggling other concerns within his caucus and conference. We had the number three Republican leader, Liz Cheney, condemn Trump in the strongest terms and vote to impeach. And a move inside his own conference to strip her of her leadership, even as she was condemned by the Republican Party back in her home state of Wyoming. He quelled that and managed to deal with it in his conference with a secret ballot vote, which she prevailed by more than 2-1, although 61 of his colleagues voted to condemn Cheney. At the same time, he had to deal with Marjorie Taylor Greene, an all-in member of QAnon who had threatened the life of the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who had done an image of herself with an assault-style weapon pointed pretty much at three of the members of the so-called squad, these women of color, and had, of course, also said a number of highly inflammatory things otherwise, and managed to head off any attempt to condemn her. So he's juggling a conference which has people who are way off on the radical fringe, and others who are just mainline conservatives. And of course, Liz Cheney, having the pedigree of her father, Dick Cheney, having been the number two leader in the House, the Secretary of Defense, and the Vice President. So
yeah, it's quite an array.
Challenge is a significant one,
yep.
But at every turn, McCarthy has taken a course that is not going to be good in terms of appealing to those college-educated suburban voters again.
It's a really interesting question, and I want to come back to this in a bit and ask you about whether this sort of Republican tent, as we've known it, can hold together. But let me introduce Michael Whatley. He's the chair of the North Carolina Republican Party. He joins us from the party's headquarters in Raleigh. And Michael Whatley, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Hey, Anthony. It's great to be with you today.
Let me sort of start right off with your senator, Richard Byrd. He voted to convict the president. He was one of the seven Republicans who voted to find President Trump guilty. What's your reaction, and what's been the reaction to others in the North Carolina GOP?
Well, I'm disappointed, and I think that the vast majority of the Republican Party across North Carolina is disappointed with the vote, particularly considering that he had voted earlier to say that the proceedings were unconstitutional as you're impeaching a former president. I firmly agree with him that the proceedings were unconstitutional. But the Republican Party itself remains strongly unified down here. And I think, frankly, across the country in terms of saying that we want the Democrats that are in charge of the House and in charge of the Senate to be focused more on the American people's needs, on the coronavirus, on the economy, and not focusing on divisive, votes like with impeachment.
Well, let me ask you about that vote to impeach, because, of course, the Democratic House managers were really focused on one thing and one thing only, and this was the idea that Donald Trump incited his supporters and was really bore ultimate responsibility for the deadly attack on the Capitol. As chairman of the GOP in North Carolina, do you agree with that? Do you think Donald Trump bears responsibility for what happened on January 6th?
I think that the events on January 6th were horrific, and there's absolutely no way to sugarcoat it. We at the party, myself as the chair, put out numerous statements condemning the actions that the mob took at the Capitol. At the end of the day, the responsibility is borne by those who broke the law, by those who went to the Capitol and committed the violence that took place on January 6th. The president did not say, go attack the Capitol. The president said, make your voices heard. There is a world of difference between making your voices heard and attacking the Capitol and resulting in violence and loss of life.
But what about the weeks that the president spent claiming that the election was a fraud? I mean, clearly this had a big effect on encouraging those people to march on the Capitol. Doesn't he bear responsibility for that? And at least to some extent, lots of people would say to a large extent. But what's your view?
My view is that the actions of the people that attacked the Capitol are unexcusable. Mm-hmm. There's no rationale. There's no justification for it. And they bear responsibility for their actions.
Right. But not President Trump, not former President Trump.
You know, President Trump did not tell the crowd to go attack the Capitol. He did not tell the crowd to go attack those folks. The president, throughout the course of, that period, raised a lot of concern about ballot integrity, about voter integrity, about making sure that we have integrity in the voting system, which I completely agree with. And again, you're not going to find many in the Republican Party who disagree with the notion that there were irregularities in a number of states and that needs to be investigated.
Right. But are you one of those people in the Republican Party who recognizes Joe Biden as the legitimately elected president of the United States? Where are you on that today?
Absolutely. Look, I was a member of the Electoral College, and I proudly cast my vote for President Trump. But the Electoral College voted, and a majority was for Joe Biden, and he is the president of the United States.
Yeah. You still with us, Mr. Whatley? You faded away there. You still with us?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good. Another question. Do you think former President Trump remains a popular force within the North Carolina Republican Party? And do you believe that continued allegiance to him will help your party grow?
Yeah, look, President Trump brought extreme excitement to the party. He brought new voters to the party. He brought votes out that we've not seen before. We as a party had almost 82% turnout in this election cycle, which not only carried the state for Donald Trump, but it also carried the state for Tom Tillis. We won all three of our close congressional races, expanded our majority in the House, held the North Carolina Senate. We won 6 out of 10 Council of State races and 8 out of 8 on our Supreme Court and Court of Appeals. That doesn't happen without Donald Trump on the ballot. So we're excited about the voters and the enthusiasm that he brought to the party, and he does remain a very popular figure with a base.
Do you think, though, that he will continue to remain a popular figure with the base? I mean, given the fact that in the course of his presidency, I mean, he lost the presidency, he lost the Senate, he lost the House, he was twice impeached, 7 members of his own party voted to convict him. He's now, I mean, do you think that he's going to continue to excite the base in that way, given these circumstances?
I would expect so. Again, we had tremendous results here in North Carolina with the enthusiasm that he brought to the party, and to the degree that he wants to play a role going forward. I think that would be welcome from the base all across North Carolina.
Mm. Michael Whatley, stand by. Norm Ornstein is with us, and he's been listening along. And Norm, I'm just wondering what you hear in the interview with Michael Whatley, or if you have a question that you'd like to pose directly to him.
I guess I would love to hear a little bit more about Michael Whatley's reaction to what Mitch McConnell said, saying that President Trump is morally responsible. But I would also love to hear his reaction to the phone call that Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, had with the president while all of this was going on, begging for help from the president as the rioters were approaching the House chamber, and having the president completely spurn him and say, I guess these are people who care more about the election than you did, Kevin. Whether he thinks that exonerates the president from any responsibility.
What do you think, Mr. Whatley?
Look, I think that, the president's actions are going to be studied by history and folks like Norm, and I totally understand that. The actions that were taken by that mob lie on that mob. And I don't think that there's any attempt by me or anybody in the North Carolina Republican Party to justify that. But at the end of the day, the president, former President Trump, is a private citizen. Impeachment is all about removing a president or officer from office. And it's unconstitutional to have that proceeding when he's a former official.
Okay. I have one more question for you, Michael Whatley, before I let you go. And I just want to ask you this about the idea that states like North Carolina arguably are among those states that are becoming more purple as time goes on. I mean, you did outline some of the successes that the Republicans had in the last election cycle. But I'd point out as well that you have a Democratic governor. Cal Cunningham came close to beating Senator Tom Tillis. I mean, it wasn't a runaway victory by any means. So are you worried that as time goes on, doubling down on support for what former President Trump represents might detract from that ability to attract more moderate voters as time goes on?
Yeah, I think that, what you raise in terms of voter turnout and the demographics of our electorate. You know, we had more than 1 million votes cast in 2020 than we did in 2016. And we are going to continue as a state to attract more and more people that are going to come in to the state. And even with us having, close to, 82% Republican turnout, there were a number of very narrow victories that we had in the presidential race, the Senate race, our Supreme Court race. Actually was won by 401 votes after a recount. So, I mean, we, we know that it's a very tight. We also know college-educated suburban voters are a key component of the groups that are moving in, and that's a group where the Republican Party needs to do much better in terms of communicating with and talking to them. I think in terms of, you know, the agenda moving forward, the agenda that the president put on the table, the America First agenda, where he talked about standing up to China, talked about defending our borders, talked about making sure that we had an economy that was working for all sectors of the economy, you know, tax cuts that were better for the lower 25% than the top 25%. That type of an agenda is something that is very popular all across North Carolina. We need to make sure that we're pushing on a powerful agenda, the America First agenda, going forward in those election cycles.
All right. Michael Whatley, chair of the North Carolina Republican Party, thank you so much for joining us today. We're very grateful. We really appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
And Norm Ornstein with the American Enterprise Institute, Emeritus Scholar. Stand by. There's more to come. We're going to be talking about a lot of what we've been hearing for the rest of the hour, where the Republican Party goes now in the wake of former President Trump's acquittal in the impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. Tomorrow on the program, access to the ballot and voter suppression. We'll be talking about the hundreds of bills being introduced in state houses across the country, Republican bills that will make it harder for many Americans to vote, and Democratic bills that aim to make it easier. We want to hear what you think about mail-in ballots, absentee voting, and whether more Americans should be counted in our elections. If you were a first-time voter last November, Republican or Democrat, we want to know what that meant to you. Tell us your story at 617-353-0683. Today, we're talking about the acquittal of former President Donald Trump in his second impeachment trial and where this takes the Republican Party. Norm Ornstein, emeritus scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, is with us. We'll hear more from him. But first, let's go back to January 6th for a moment and talk about one of the most vivid images that summed up the fear of that day. The picture captures a moment after lawmakers had gathered to certify the election of President Joe Biden and violent rioters stormed the Capitol. It shows Representative Susan Wild, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, lying on her back in the House gallery being comforted by fellow Representative Jason Crow, a Democrat from Colorado. On Point producer Grace Tatter spoke to the congresswoman about that moment. Wild said that as rioters pounded on the House gallery doors, she managed to reach her adult children on FaceTime.
They, you know, started to ask me questions, and I was trying to say, I'm okay, they're going to evacuate us. But I was in a crouched over position. You know, they could see that, you know, and then they could hear the gunshots and the breaking glass and the pounding and the screaming. And so even though I said I was okay, I'll never forget my son saying, how can you say you're okay? We can hear what's going on.
Congresswoman Wild, Congressman Jason Crow, and other members of Congress hid on the floor of the House gallery for at least 25 minutes until they managed to flee to a safe room in the Capitol complex.
Jason said to all of us, take off your pins, and meaning our congressional identification pins. And that really hit me hard, because I thought, oh, we're supposed to conceal ourselves because these people are looking for us.
Wild was wearing her pin on a necklace, which she slipped off and put in her pocket. As she crawled toward a gallery exit to evacuate, she lost a shoe and ended up walking to the safe room barefoot.
There was a sense of disbelief the whole time this was going on in real time. It didn't seem quite real. In my mind, it was like impossible for this to be happening, that somebody could breach the Capitol.
Wild represents Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, home to lots of Republicans. She's the first Democrat to represent the district in 2 decades, but she says her vote to impeach Donald Trump transcended partisanship.
This was a major attack. And I'm not talking about on a personal level. I'm just talking about for our country. If anything, I've become more resolute about the importance of what we are doing in Congress and standing up for what is right and making sure that, quite frankly, that our children and the future generations are able to read about this and know that there was a large group of people who were trying very hard to hold the perpetrators of this violence accountable.
That's Congresswoman Susan Wild, a Democrat of Pennsylvania, talking to On Point producer Grace Tatter about the events of January 6th. Norm Ornstein, emeritus scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. As we listen back to that moment about January 6th, a really basic question I wanted to ask you just about the impeachment trial that the Democrats mounted. Did they do everything they needed to do, could do, to make their case?
I do think they did. And, you know, the criticism of them for not calling more witnesses, I think in the end, if we look back on it, take away the emotion of just that moment, which, of course, occurred right at the end of the trial when we got that vivid expression from the Republican Congresswoman, Jamie Herrera Butler, of that conversation that Kevin McCarthy had with President Trump. And they suggested they would call witnesses. They didn't in the end because most of the witnesses weren't going to testify. They were frightened, but also because it wouldn't change the votes. And what's so striking to me, Anthony, is that you listen to what we just heard, and it makes your skin crawl to think about people in that situation not knowing whether they would live or die. Mm. All of the emotional content that was in the House manager's presentation that had, for example, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma get so agitated on the floor of the Senate. He was the one who may have come closest to being murdered that day, that his colleagues had to go over and comfort him. But Lankford, of course, voted to acquit. And what we know is that this was an extraordinary day for the members, for the staff, for some of the families of the members, for Mike Pence as well. But in the aftermath of these assaults, after they regrouped later that evening on January 6th, after they had been under siege, 2/3 of the Republicans in the House still voted effectively that the election had been rigged and that the electoral votes didn't reflect the votes themselves, and almost a dozen Republicans in the Senate. So it tells you, I think, volumes about where the party's mindset is. And Michael Whatley reflected that in his comments to us a little bit earlier.
Right.
They are simply not going to go down the path of saying this was the most violent assault on the fundamental values of America and an attempt to overthrow the system and the government. But we're not going to put the blame on Donald Trump for incitement, despite the fact that the evidence is just pretty overwhelming.
And you've written about this, and I want to ask you about the 7 Republicans who voted with the Democrats to convict Richard Burr. I want to focus on Richard Burr and Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, Richard Burr of North Carolina. The reason I want to focus on them is they're 2 of the 7 who voted, but they're retiring. And you wrote a piece not long ago with a headline that if Republicans won't risk defeat to tell the truth, Trump will own their party. And I'm thinking about Republicans like Jeff Flake, for example, who said, I'm getting out because he was faced with a primary opponent. Is it your view that these Republicans should stick it out and really try to make a case about why it's important to stick it out and to stand up to President Trump, but they're not?
I do believe that. And, you know, I've known Jeff Flake since he served in the House. I like him a lot. I consider him a friend. He's been courageous in a lot of what he's said over time, and that includes his time in Congress. But, you know, if people leave the Republican Party, there isn't really a great alternative out there. And here's the bottom line reality, Anthony. Our political system needs two parties that are problem-solving oriented, respectful of institutions of what we call the regular order. They're going to have very different ideologies. The Republican Party ideology, if it becomes a problem-solving party, is going to be pretty close to what Jeff Flake represents, and Ben Sasse, who's a very conservative guy who also voted to acquit. But it's very different if your orientation is to solve problems than if it is to cling to power by suppressing votes and blowing up norms and institutions and not caring about anything that requires compromise. And if we don't have powerful people inside making that case, then we get what we see right now, which is, frankly, a party that is more a cult and to some degree a cult of personality around Trump, but more broadly a cult. And we know from our surveys as well that Democrats and independents believe that to solve our national problems, we often need to compromise, and Republicans by significant majorities don't. And that's not a good thing to have in a political system. We need a Republican Party that's going to be a conservative party that functions as a conservative party and not in a radical fashion. And if we get people like Jeff Flake leaving the battlefield and simply dealing with it from the outside, it's not as helpful as if they continued to fight from inside. Now, we have to say that, you know, while we had these two retirees, Burr and Toomey, who voted to convict, we had two other retirees, Richard Shelby of Alabama and Rob Portman of Ohio, who voted to acquit. So that tells you as well that this isn't just about fearing a primary challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a more broadly a problem of what we see in a kind of cult, that you don't want to be shunned or excommunicated by your friends and your supporters.
So the big sort of question that I feel like is almost the concluding question that I want to ask you is looking forward. I mean, the Republican Party, well, let's go back to 2015. The Republican Party seemed to function as a kind of uneasy alliance between sort of traditional conservatives. I mean, let's give them a name. People like Mitt Romney, for example. And in that tent, there were also, you know, these hardcore Trump supporters, which people like Mitt Romney didn't want a lot to do with. But they made common cause over sort of legislative accomplishments. Can that tent? It doesn't seem like that tent is going to hold together. And if it can't, what does that mean for the future of the party? Does it break up?
You know, we've had one instance, at least in the past, where a party was supplanted in the 1850s. You know, the Whig Party became the modern Republican Party. It can happen. But the fact is we have a system set up, structures, laws, and otherwise, that make it extraordinarily difficult without constitutional change to have, say, a third party or another party that can gain traction in the political system. And we're in uncharted territory here now as to what happens with all of this. What I would say more broadly is the future of the Republican Party, I think, may depend a lot on what happens in those midterm contests in 2022 and what leads up to it. The game plan that worked for Republicans in the midterm contests when Barack Obama was president, 2010, 2014, was to unite like a parliamentary minority party, oppose everything, use the filibuster as much as you could, block what you could and what you couldn't, delegitimize. And it worked like a charm. They won the House with the largest number of seats in 100 years in 2010, won the Senate in 2014. If they use the same approach and they win the House, Senate, or both in 2022, I don't think they're going to change. And I think we're going to see doubling down on suppressing votes and trying to win with a minority of support in the country and not really reaching out more broadly. If they lose, if they don't recapture either House, then there is traction for the Mitt Romneys of the world, and maybe even from the outside, the Jeff Flakes, from the inside, from a Ben Sasse, to recapture something of what we believe is needed. Otherwise, we have a divorce, and what happens with it is just not anything that we've seen, certainly in our lifetimes, and looking back much longer than that.
Well, Norm Ornstein, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you for your perspective on this. Big questions you leave on the table for us, important ones, and we certainly appreciate your guidance as we consider them. That's Norm Ornstein, Emeritus Scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. He's also a contributing editor at The Atlantic. Norm, thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure, Anthony.
And we're going to finish up today. I want to turn to On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. He joins us from Hanover, New Hampshire. He's been listening throughout the hour. And Jack, what do you take away from this conversation about former President Trump's acquittal and what this means for the future of the Republican Party?
Well, and what it means for the American future. You know, Norm rightly draws our attention to this upcoming midterm election. Representative Dean, Madeline Dean of Pennsylvania, one of the impeachment managers from the House, said, if we don't set this right, meaning holding Trump accountable for inciting the insurrection, quote, the past will become our future. And she was referring not only to the attack on the Capitol, but to the actions of the two-thirds of House Republicans who are willing to throw out the results of the election. That event of the two of them, the sort of, you could call it the armed wing of the GOP and the institutional wing, those are extremists. And that puts the media under a unique responsibility in reporting about this upcoming campaign. Americans have to understand that if Kevin McCarthy is the speaker and Mitch McConnell is the Senate president, then the scenario the president outlined, President Trump outlined in the campaign, we're going to throw the election into the House under the 12th Amendment, that could come to pass, and the presidency could be, in effect, stolen from the majority of the electors. Now, what is standing in the way of this? Convention on the part of the media. Barack Obama draws good attention to it in his memoir. He says, here's how it worked. You report what one side says, quick soundbite, report what the other side says, opposing soundbite, and leave it to an opinion poll to sort out who's right. We can't go on like that anymore. And in an interview with over the weekend with Der Spiegel, Marty Baron, the retiring editor of The Washington Post, it takes responsibility for, we had to be much more forthright about Trump's lies, he said. Why did we call them falsehoods? Why did we call them inaccurate claims? Why did we normalize this pathological liar and his lies? Those are the kinds of questions the media has to ask itself. They're not reporting about, you know, the differences in, about policy. That's important to get right. There are fundamental differences, though, about commitments to democracy. The Democratic Party is committed to it, win or lose. We don't know about the Republicans.
Well, as Norm Ornstein said, uncharted territory remains ahead of us. Jack Beatty, On Point News analyst, always great to hear your perspective. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.